Welcome to the Nonprofit Executive Podcast, the podcast for growth-minded nonprofit executives looking to take their nonprofit to the next level through strategic planning and fundraising. This episode is brought to you by the Nonprofit Executive Club, the club for nonprofit executives. Go to nonprofitexecutiveclub.com to learn more. I'm your host, Joel Kessel, along with Mary Valone. And Mary, it's always a pleasure to see you and talk to you every week.
Thanks, Joel. This has been fun. I, you know, just love being able to jump in and have the conversation about strategic planning and fundraising. I know we are kind of nerds, aren't we?
That's okay.
I hope we're not alone. I hope that we have a good crew that's listening in. And, you know, as always, we just have a good time teaching this stuff, knowing that it is making a difference. And thankfully, we have a lot of people who are listening in and sharing how, you know, this stuff is working for them. Joel, I had somebody just reach out to me the other day, and she said that she had increased her fundraising by 50% in a season where a lot of nonprofits were seeing decline. And that brings me a lot of joy, because I know this stuff works. And I've seen it with small nonprofits to really large scale nonprofits. So we're going to keep yapping at you guys each week and share this stuff, and hope you guys are implementing it as you walk with us through this all.
Absolutely. So this is episode 13. We're talking about run your research. That's step two in your process. Step one, we talked about last week on focus your vision, but today we're talking about research. Now, I know there's probably some listeners out there kind of rolling their eyes. Others are like, yeah, love numbers, love data. You know, I can't have enough of it. But there's got to be a healthy mix and a healthy balance when it comes to running your research. And I love what you've outlined in your book on this area and this topic. So why don't we dive in and let's talk about what kind of research are we looking for when we're talking about step two? So we're at least getting enough information to help us make some great decisions.
Yes. So research actually allows us to gain confidence. And so when people say, "Ooh, it makes me nervous to fundraise and I don't like fundraising," this is the step that allows you to gain that confidence to say, you know what, I know that there's people out there that want to do this. I know that we're walking down the right path, and therefore you can stand more confident when you go and make the ask. So I don't want you to skip over this saying, oh, research, that's, I don't need that. This really is an important step in the process, and especially when you're trying to regroup to raise a larger amount of money than maybe you have in the past. So yeah, this is, I mean, the data, the numbers, they're important. I know that one of my good friends obviously says, he shares with me often that it's like, you want to be specific with data and this stuff to be believable, you know? So it's like, you want to give enough statistics to show that you know what you're doing, you know the information, but it's all because you want to be believable. But here, when we're talking about run your research, what I'm doing in this process is I'm trying to really evaluate, what are other people doing? What's working? What's my competition doing? What are my allies doing? When it comes to charitable work though, Joel, a lot of people think that, well, we don't have competition because we're all doing really good work, right? We are all doing really good work, but there are clearly organizations and other individuals who are doing similar work to yours, and some of them are seeing success and some of them not so much. So, you know, when you and I were together, Joel, for our previous workshop, you know, somebody made a comment about, oh, this organization, they've got billboards up everywhere and, you know, they're raising this money through this event. Man, their fundraiser raises hundreds of thousands of dollars. Why can't we do that? And we should just do what they're doing. All that to be said is, good on them. You know, good on them for paying attention, watching what their competitors are doing. And obviously their competitors, by doing well, also means that they're raising awareness for a population of people that they care about. So that's all good stuff, that they're doing good work out there. Running your research, to me, is really just digging in and figuring out what's working and what's not. And so you can see in my book, I, you know, dig through the different components, the allies, the competition. I'll just share real quickly where this kind of came from. But when I was doing my work through the American Cancer Society, one of the things that I wanted to see was, okay, I had never really worked for an organization that had so many different chapters, so many different groups that were under our umbrella. You know, so I had you know, gala events. And of course, my fundraiser that I raised such a significant amount of money on was a gala. And so I looked at Chicago and Texas and New York and Detroit. And I was looking at all these other cities and what were they doing and why were they seeing such success? So they had the same name, right? They had the same branding. They had the same vision. They had the same mission. So I was like, okay, I know that the vision, the mission, all that works, because they're obviously seeing success with it.
Right.
So what do I need to do to replicate their success? Now, I'm no Detroit. I lived in Springfield, Missouri at the time. You know, the population was about 170,000 with the surrounding area. You got in Branson and some of those other areas, and you're closer to about 400,000 people. But for the most part, we were not a big city. So I was trying to look at the big cities and say, well, what are they doing? Because it doesn't matter, like if they were raising $4 million, let's say, that was our Dallas, Texas location. They were raising $4 million with one single fundraiser. And I was like, what are they doing? And everybody said, don't replicate them. Don't try and replicate them. That's 40 years of, it was like in its 37th year or something. They're like, that is 37 years of magic that just fell into their lap. They had, you know, I mean, all the famous people that actually put on the show Dallas, they were all a part of their fundraiser. And so they had all these celebrities and they had the governor and the mayor and the, you know, I mean, everybody you could think of were a part of this fundraiser. But I'm like, something happened where it went well. It worked. Now, will I replicate it perfectly where I'll get all the celebrities and I'll get all those people to show up? Probably not. But I wanted to pay attention to what they were doing. The other location, the one that I really paid most attention to, was actually Chicago. And the reason why I paid attention to them was because they launched a first-year event and net $1.8 million.
Wow.
Nobody puts on a first-year event.
Right.
It just happens to get $1.8 million. It doesn't just land in your lap by chance. So even if I didn't raise $1.8 million, I knew that their process, something was working. Right. Dallas, Chicago, I did the same thing with Tyler, Texas, like I said, these other locations. And I was like, okay, same organization, same mission, same vision, you know, all those things were in order. Now all I had to find out was, how did they get those people to say yes? And so I actually asked them for their materials, because we're the same organization. Why would you not want to help your peers out? So if you're listening and you have a counterpart in another location that's doing extremely well, you get their stinking materials. Have a phone conversation with them. Say, hey, could we jump on a call together? And I was really fortunate because the way that we were structured was actually set up to where we got to be on a call together. So every single month, I was on a phone conversation with my allies. You know, so all these people who are doing similar work. So I just immediately fixated my eyes on all the leaders. There were 60 fundraisers, galas that were happening in my region, you know, just in, you know, six states that I was a part of. And I went from top to bottom and I said, okay, who are in the top 10% of this list? And I want to go find out what they're doing. And so I picked up the phone and I had conversations with each one of them. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm saying run your research on your allies.
Yeah.
And now your competition, like there was a breast cancer organization in town. I would consider them my competition. There's still not a whole lot of love there, I don't believe. I mean, because they're local, we were national. And so it was this like whole competition, like, oh, this national organization is swooping in, taking our money, you know, and I understand what they were thinking. But I also was like, we're the ones coming up with all the all the numbers, like the statistics for all cancer research was coming out of our organization. So I'm like, your doctors wouldn't even know how to treat your people if they didn't have our organization. So it's like, so there was lots of things where we were, you know, we needed both organizations. And that's probably the case for you as well, is that your community needs those organizations and there's a reason why they exist. They do different work, not the same most likely, but now pay attention to what they're doing. So what I did on the competition side was I went through and I did my, and I call it Sherlock Holmes research, because that was what my mentor always said. He's like, do your Sherlock Holmes research. And I was like, okay. So what you have to do is you actually have to, and what Sherlock Holmes does is you have to create broad observations off of minute details. So you have to get these little details, like maybe it's Facebook, maybe it's social media, maybe it's that PR, you know, like they're being interviewed on TV about their event or their fundraiser. And so now you're like, you have to draw the broad observations off of that little detail that you found on social media. You found, because you're not going to necessarily call up your competition and be like, how'd you raise that money? How'd you guys figure that out? You know, who's on your board? You know, like, so you got to kind of go undercover and figure out what are they doing and what's working and what's not. Now, I'm not saying find out what they're doing and then replicate to a T, because you know that your organization is uniquely different from theirs. All we're doing is we're pulling information so that we know, okay, what did they do? And there's probably a reason why they set their prices for their event at the price point that they did. There's probably a chance that they did their research as well to figure out how to figure out what to charge and who they should have involved in that.
So how much of this component here, researching your competition, is, you know, understanding, hey, these guys do 6 events every year. This is when they have them. Then does that help you then decide when you should have your events per se? Do you have it at the same time and go direct competition, or do you have it in the off months that they do?
And that's a great question, Joel, because that's really what I was looking for when I was pulling my spreadsheet together for competition. So I pulled out an Excel spreadsheet and I just started line by line by line trying to find who else in our community is doing a similar fundraiser like me. And I'm trying to figure out, when are they doing it? How much are they raising? What location are they using? And so I'm just looking for patterns. I'm looking to see, like, okay, are all the elite charities in town going to the same location? So, like, I live in St. Louis right now. When I started doing my research on St. Louis, I found out that majority of the high-level fundraisers were being done at the Ritz-Carlton. So to me, I'm like, if I want to compete with the big boys, I'm going to either one have to go to the Ritz-Carlton, or I'm going to have to create a unique location that no one else is using. So I can create an entirely new environment in that location and say, you know what, you've never been here before. And so therefore I can create this elite experience for them. But all that's doing, like you know, what you're saying, when you pull all that information, yes, it allows me to know. And it's not so much that I'm going to say yes, or, you know, I'm not going to host my event in that month because, oh, this group is hosting their event.
Right.
No, all it's doing is it's letting me know, okay, what am I coming up against? Mm-hmm. So what are the, you know, that SWOT analysis that we talked about in the previous episodes, you know, about, like, I just want to know, you know, what are my strengths, my weaknesses, you know, the all those things that could come into place, the opportunities and the threats. Mm-hmm. And if they are going to be a threat, and I'm not saying that another fundraiser is necessarily a threat. I mean, the national championship game that's happening that we might actually win this year could also become that instant threat to your date of your event or your fundraiser.
Great point.
So those things, I'm just putting it all on paper so that I have an idea. And so when I set my fundraising date, I set it for the first week. Well, it was typically the first, second week of August. And a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, that's a bad time of the year to do a fundraiser. And I was like, you know what? It's back to school. It's the only time, the location that I wanted to use, that was the time where they weren't using that facility. I was putting on a Western themed fundraiser, so I needed to make sure that my fundraiser was in a location that was unique. Nobody else, and catch this, Joel, when I did my research, I found a location that no one else could replicate. No one could replicate our location. So I found the most unique spot. Like, right. I mean, we were in a barn. You had to bring in flooring. You had to bring in air conditioning. Like, we created from the ground up this incredible facility and experience for our guests that no one else could replicate. But Joel, the reason why I did that was because I did my research on my allies. And so when I watched that $4 million fundraiser that was happening in Dallas, Texas, they created it from the ground up. It was at this the beautiful, you know, like South Fork Ranch, which is like historic in Dallas, Texas, you know. And so it was like they built it from the ground up. They brought tents, they brought air conditioning units, they brought in the governor. You know, it's like all these things were happening, but they created an experience and no one else in our community was going to work that hard.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. But you know what? I know there's people listening going, yeah, but Mary, that sounds great, but I don't have the budget to afford to bring in air conditioning and flooring and build something.
How
do you respond to that?
You know what, Joel? I paid nothing for those facilities. I got everything donated. So the way that we, you know, approached this was we back to doing our research, who could we talk to that would donate their services so that before we started, we knew that we were not in the hole. And I, back to my research, I know that media outlets, I know that, you know, the local community wants their products and services to be featured. And so our first meetings, based on the research again, when I get into step three next week, we'll talk about enlisting your team. But while I was doing my research, I started to realize that I was like, okay, if we want all the food donated, here's where we need to go. If I want the facility donated, here's what we need to do. So before we even approached anybody, before we started even bringing people in, I started looking at what can we get donated and what can we get for free? Because you know that cash is hard to get versus products and services.
Mary, this is gold. This is great, great stuff. I remember, you know, one of the things I love about the work we do is it forces us to be creative. That's exactly what you're talking about and thinking outside of the box on a lot of this stuff. But that's why this is so important. Having that vision that we talked about the last time and then starting to do some of that research is really going to put us in a great position to make great decisions and be highly strategic as we're going to have success around this event.
Yeah.
This is great.
And knowing your allies and your competition to me, yeah, like just allows me more information so that I know how to make better decisions for our cause, you know, because in the end I was like, okay, it was cancer. So I was like, okay, who cares about cancer? Who's going to, you know, what kinds of organizations, what kinds of groups are going to want to rally with us on this kind of a fundraiser? But we did a lot of legwork and I'm afraid that there's a lot of people out there that want quick wins. Mm-hmm. And so but I'm telling you, if you're raising larger dollars of money, like, I mean, if we're looking at large sums, we have got to do this legwork. We have to do this kind of work so that we can attract those larger dollars into our cause. And so, but one of the things that I really heavily lean into on in, you know, this step, particularly Run Your Research, is I want people to understand that you as the leader of the organization are all, you have to research yourself through this process as well. And I teased it a little bit on our last week's episode, but this week, I'm like, we have got to know who we are and how we present ourselves to the general population that we want to engage into our organization. And so I'm going to use an example. One of our students that Joel and I work with, he had got a hold of my book and he started going through the process and he really latched onto this, you know, research yourself section. Now he's a former youth leader and he's like, I'm used to wearing sweatpants, you know, like shorts and flip-flops and t-shirts. And that's just how I showed up to work every day. I work with kids. So why would I need to dress up? But he immediately took a look in the mirror and said, if I'm going to raise the kinds of money that I need to raise for this cause, I cannot show up to meetings in flip-flops and shorts. And so all he did not do this major, you know, transformation physically, but all he did was he put closed-toed shoes on, khakis, and a polo. So, I mean, not a major transformation, but all he did was he just took it up a notch. And he told me afterwards, he said, people, you would think that I just totally like have wrecked this place, you know, that it's like, I walk in and they're like, well, why are you all dressed up? Where are you going? Who are you going to go see today? And it was like, immediately they gave him this response in a way that it was like, oh, you look like you are doing something important today.
Right.
And he even said, he goes, I was just wearing a polo. Like, it wasn't a, you know, a suit and tie or nothing like that. But, and I think that that's really important for us to realize as the leaders of our organization is that people will judge you in 7 seconds. And the time that we live in now, when I asked people, I was like, how quick do you think that people judge? And they're like, 3. I mean, like, it takes 3 wow. seconds, you know, because it is so quick to just, you look at somebody, you look them up and down, and that's all you need to know to say, do they have their stuff together? what kind of organization do they run? I bet I could see what, I bet I know what their car looks like. I bet I know what their office looks like just based on their physical appearance in 3 seconds.
Yeah, this is good. This is good stuff. So, you know, allies, competition, yourself, what other things should we be looking at as we're running our research and gaining more clarity?
You know, the last thing that I just want to address here is really about desperation. Mm-hmm. And Joel, this is one of those topics that I could rant on for quite some time.
But this is probably 2 other episodes, right?
I know, exactly. But when it comes to desperation, you know, when you care, okay, last week we talked about your why and being so passionate about the work that you guys do. And I know you do not do this work. I mean, many of you do not do this for the money or the accolades or the recognition. You do this because it's the right thing to do and there's people that really need you. But the thing is that when you are so passionate about something and you know that the dollars are the only thing that's standing in the way of you changing lives, you say and do things that sometimes come off very desperate. And so I think about a young woman, he's very desperate to be in a relationship with her. And all of a sudden he says things that might be inappropriate and she's completely turned off and was like, no, thank you, move along. Mm-hmm. And so that's the same kind of desperation that we give off when it comes to raising funds. And I see it on social media all the time. I see it in print materials. I mean, Joel, everywhere. I see it on TV when people are doing their media interviews and I'm like, why would you say that? You know, and it comes out because there is this feeling of, oh my gosh, we need you so bad. And then it comes off as though we're begging and we're pleading for cash. And I want to just encourage you, even though you might feel that inside right now, I want you to put the face on that we got this together. Like, even if you don't, like you, and I say fake it till you make it. I know there's people who are like, ah, that's a stupid comment. But I was like, I don't know. I faked it till I made it. And I was in my early 20s and I was faking it. You know, I was showing up, wearing the clothes, you know, trying to look professional, having those conversations with people with confidence. And I just had to fake it in the beginning. And so, but eventually I started to gain more confidence. I started to feel more comfortable in asking people for funds. And now today I teach people how to do it. You know, so I just want you guys to see that it's like, you might feel that desperation right now, but the best thing that you can do is you can put on the clothes, you can do the research, you can start to gain that confidence and know that, you know what, I might not have it all figured out right now, but I'm going to present myself in a way that shows them that I care about my cause and that it matters.
You know, Mary, this is so good because what you're teaching is long-term success. Guys, if you're listening to this and follow her steps, you know, you've gone through the strategic planning, now you're focused on the fundraising. We're in it for the long haul. And this topic and discussion around desperation, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Mary, but it's for those organizations that are just cranking out events and one and done, and then we just need money and it's just whatever's right in front of them and turn and burn, essentially.
And that's why your development staff are, it's a revolving door. They just can't keep up with that. And so if you're an executive director that can't seem to keep a development director, that's why, because it's, you know, and I'm one of those people that couldn't stick around for very long because it's just that expectation is just too high. And so, and it's, you just burn people out so fast when you're doing events back to back to back. And I'm like, if you have a strategic plan, if you work through Joel's process, you have a strategic plan and you sit down and you actually plan out your signature key fundraiser. This is why I teach people how to put on one fundraiser a year. One. Because all I'm looking for is an excuse to get together. So I just want to get all my donors in a room together, even if they can't come. The whole point is that we're gathering together and we're celebrating the incredible success of our cause. So when I talk about signature fundraisers, I had somebody say, they're like, well, I'm doing a fundraiser because you told me to. And I was like, I'm not telling you to do a fundraiser. I'm telling you to gather your people at least once a year. because we got to have an excuse to celebrate. And it just so happens that it can be a fundraiser where we raise more funds at that gathering. But the reason why we're gathering is purely because we're making a difference in the world. And by golly, we got to get together and celebrate that, you know? So, and when you get people together in a room and you're celebrating it, people will pull out their checkbooks because they're going to see, oh my gosh, what if we did more? What if we rallied together and gave more to that particular project or to that, the general fund? We could help X more people then. And it just gets people fired up. So yeah, this stuff, it's not, I mean, this is not rocket science. That's why I tell people when it comes to fundraising, little kids can do it. So if little kids can fundraise, I mean, me selling my candy bars in second grade or, you know, the lemonade stands outside, it is not hard to fundraise, but you do have to be more strategic. You have to have a better plan if you're starting to raise larger sums of money. So that's all I'm teaching you here is do your research, and research on a $100,000 fundraiser is going to look very different than research on a $1 million fundraiser or $100 million fundraiser. So you can see here back to you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, and that will allow you to surround yourself with like-minded people who are going to get you towards the goal that you're looking forward to. So
and really, if you do the steps and the things that you're teaching and talking about here, desperation doesn't even factor into this if you're going about it the right way.
Absolutely. I never felt desperate, especially when I worked for this particular organization, but I think that it was because I had such a sense of confidence. By the time I even sat across the table from somebody who could financially give or be a part of our cause, I had already rallied such an incredible group of people behind me that I didn't feel like I was alone in the process. Back to my why. I don't want you to be alone. So that's my thing. I build teams. I incorporate. I make sure that I rally this core crew around me. So then it's like, I'm just the voice. I'm just the voice for this crew. And I'm going to get out there and I'm going to tell people about how they can be a part of it. But in the end, it's because we're all doing this together. And so, yeah, when I get people who say, oh my gosh, how do you ask? And one of my clients, she's like, could you do like a role play thing with me? By the way, I hate role playing. But if you've ever been to a conference, I'm like, oh, I hate role playing. But they're good. I mean, it's good to watch somebody else do it. But the thing is that when you're in that moment and you're sitting across the table with somebody, you either feel like, wow, we should be doing this together. Or you feel like, yeah, they don't get us. And in that moment, you're just going to know, yeah, we're not a good fit.
And that's okay, right?
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Better to be across the table and say, we're not a good fit, walk away, than to try and cram them into your cause, find a place for them, and then let them drive you crazy for decades to come. That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. So good.
Anyway, I love this stuff. And obviously the research phase it's all about you and you doing the work. And the way that these seven steps will roll, Joel, steps one and two, what we have just covered, steps one and two are kind of a soul journey. You know, like it's you, it's your internal team. You guys are the ones that are figuring out this vision because you did it through your strategic planning. But then you're looking at, okay, what kind of fundraiser, what kind of thing do we want to create? How do we want to raise this money? And that's all happening internally with your team. And then next week when we jump into step three, where we're going to talk about enlisting your team. So the freedom steps, focus your vision, run your research, enlist your team, FRE. We're going to talk about how you can build a team that is based on how are we going to execute what we just determined from our research and from our vision side of things.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. We'll go deep into that next week. So really, guys, when it comes to this research, Mary is a pro at all this stuff. And really, Mary, what we're doing here is setting ourselves up for success.
Yes.
By doing this step. So researching your allies, your competition, your prospects. Don't forget about taking a look at yourself and what things you can do to set yourself up for success. And through all of this, you're going to gain a lot of confidence in what you're doing here. So Mary, any closing thoughts as we wrap up today's episode?
You know, I just want to encourage you, just like how Joel, you said through your strategic planning steps, it's like, just follow the process. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the same thing for this freedom, these freedom steps, all seven of them, they all layer on top of each other. And so don't feel like, oh my gosh, I've got to have this all figured out. And I want to remind you that step six is asking for money. So there are five steps that we're going to talk about before you even approach somebody for the cash, you know? So by the time you get to step six, they're going to be asking you, how do I get involved in what you guys are doing? That sounds awesome. You know, so just want to remind you, just stay with us week after week here as we go through these steps. And then by the time you get to the place where you're going to be asking people for money, you're going to feel really confident and know that you're not alone in the process. So yeah, I have used this, and I just want to remind you guys, this is proven. Like, this stuff, I use it every single day with such a wide variety of charities, and it works for all of them. So I'm not feeding you anything that I haven't done myself. So, and thank you guys for being a part of this and for continuing to listen each week. Cause I do think that it's important that we all have the support and resources to come around us in the process.
Absolutely. And hey, gang, if you're looking for more support and direction when it comes to strategic planning and fundraising, you can jump over to the nonprofitexecutiveclub.com and you can gain more access to both Mary and myself. If you guys have questions about anything, any of the episodes and topics that we've covered around strategy and fundraising, you can email both Mary and myself anytime. You can go to mary@maryvalloni.com or you can email me at joel@kesselstrategies.com. So until next week, thank you for listening and keep making a difference in the world.